Where we ended up yesterday marked a break, not only in this chapter, but in the canto. Second canto is where Shukadeva Goswami begins to speak in response to Maharaj Pariksit's question. And he's answered the question, two questions. His answer, and then described where we ended up yesterday as the merit or the virtue or the good fortune that comes to one who follows that process. And so that could end Srimad Bhagavatam, except for the fact that Maharaj Pariksit is very expert. And he continues to prompt Shukadeva Goswami to speak further. But there's a little interlude where Vyasadeva brings the scene of Naimisharanya that we found in the first canto into the second canto. That is, Shaunaka and Suta Goswami, the sages of Naimisharanya and Suta, have their little dialogue. Because the sages have asked Suta to describe topics about Krishna. That happened in the seventh chapter of the first canto, after Narada's description to Vyas, after the compiling of all the Vedas, that he should write one additional literature in his complete form that's just glorifying the personality of Godhead. And he does so, and we hear that Shukadeva Goswami was attracted, and then the sage Shaunaka asks, how is it possible that Shukadeva Goswami, an already liberated soul, studied something? People study something because they need something. But Shukadeva Goswami was already liberated, perfectly self-satisfied, Atmarama. So why did he go and study? Why did he go and study something? So then we hear that this something is fully transcendental. And the sages then say, well, let's hear it. Krishna Katha, tell us topics about Krishna. And so in the seventh chapter, we hear about the politics of the Pandavas. Something that doesn't appear to be transcendental. Where's Krishna? And this is about strife and struggle and combat and skullduggery, the killing of the five sons of the Pandavas. And that's where the katha begins. That connects to what these verses are discussing. You'll see that this morning's verses. And so the understanding is that Krishna Katha includes topics about those in relation to Krishna. Whatever is in relation to Krishna becomes transcendentalized by contact with Krishna. So, Suta has been asked by Shaunaka, please give us Krishna Katha, Krishna Katha, and chapter and chapters and chapters. And then we hear about Maharaj Pariksit, and then the cursing of Maharaj Pariksit, and the appearance of Shukadeva Goswami. Shukadeva Goswami answers Maharaj Pariksit's question. Now we're back to Suta and Shaunaka in chapter 3. Because Suta is explaining, this is what I heard from Shukadeva Goswami. The sages are saying, not only you've heard it, but you've fully assimilated, realized it, and you can speak from the position of transcendental realization, not just information, You were there, you heard, you witnessed what happened. But you've realized the subject matter, so please give us Krishna Katha. So text 13 begins with Shaunaka having heard from Sutta what Shukadev Goswami said in response to Maharaj Parikshit. Shaunaka says, "Wow, that was good. More." The son of Vyasadeva, Shaunaka said, the son of Vyasadeva, Srila Shukadev Goswami, was a highly learned sage, and he was able to describe things in a poetic manner. The poetry of the Bhagavatam, once again. What did Maharaj Parikshit again inquire from him after hearing all that he had said? So they're expert too. More, more Krishna Katha. The point that Prabhupada makes in the purport is the emphasis on this of the 26 qualities of a devotee. One of them is the devotee is poetic. Kavi. He's also indicated as being very learned. The son of Vyasadeva, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, was a highly learned sage. So kavi can mean either one. Learned, just like Kavi Karnapur or Krishnadas Kavi Raj. So he was Krishnadas, but he was given the title Kavi, and the king of Kavis. So he was the one requested to compose Chaitanya Charitamrita, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. So Shukadev Goswami is also Kavi or poetic. The sages are recognizing, ooh, that was good. Such a decorated Vaishnav. So poetic. So nicely he's described. Then, O learned Sutta Goswami, please continue to explain such topics to us, because we are all eager to hear. Now this is the same message they gave in chapter 7. Ooh, tell us, we're very, very eager to hear that which Shukadev Goswami, upon hearing, abandoned his neutrality in Brahman realization and became attracted to Krishna. Please tell us those subject matters. Or the subject matters by which Maharaj Parikshit achieved perfection of life and went back home, back to Godhead. Please narrate those topics just as you heard it. And then the main emphasis from the purport comes in this next section. Besides that, topics which result in the discussion of the Lord, Hari, should certainly be discussed in the assembly of devotees. Bodhayantak parasparam. So Prabhupada referred to that in the previous verse that we discussed yesterday. Bodhayantak parasparam. Machita bhagatak prana. Bodhayantas, bodhayantak parasparam, katayantas chamam nityam, tushanti chas Ramantija. So it's something that, as devotees, we should value, is the opportunity in the assembly of devotees, of like-minded persons, to discuss Prabhupada's books, we can say, discuss the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. We certainly have to discuss practical matters. We also have to discuss Krishna Katha, Bodhayantak Parasparam. Because these topics are meant to be heard and discussed in the assembly of devotees, or the potencies are released through that medium. It's how we make advancement in Krishna consciousness. It's how we can relish the taste of Srimad Bhagavatam. There are certain devotees, god brothers and otherwise, that in the course of my travels I very much look forward to spending time in that place with that devotee. Just other things get set aside and we just discuss topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, or in the Brahmacharya ashram to build spiritually centered relationships. Try it from time to time. Just share with another devotee. These are some of the things that I've been reading, and wow, it's really attractive. Or in your family lives between husband and wife, this is something that I've been reading in Srimad Bhagavatam. Let me share this with you, or read together and discuss. It puts Krishna Katha at the center. It brings the life of transcendental knowledge is that media, that exchange. So these topics are meant, this is directly being stated by the sages, these topics are meant for being discussed in the assembly of devotees. Satam Siu Sadasi Dhruvam. Satam means those who are situated in Sat, means devotees, like Satam Prasangam Mavavirya Samvidho Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata. Satam, devotees. Sadasi, in the assembly. In the assembly of devotees, one should. This is what devotees do. Katyantascha mam nityam tushanti cha ramanti cha. It brings great satisfaction. So now, in the purport, Prabhupada does two main things. One is he explains that Krishna Katha means things in relation to Krishna, things about Krishna or in relation to Krishna. He quotes Rupa Goswami, or refers to Rupa Goswami in his Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that things which are in relation to Krishna are also spiritual. Or the lives of those who are doing things in relation to Krishna becomes spiritual, both. Can anybody think of those verses from Nectar of Devotion? Okay, part of the sloka.
Hari sambandhi vastuna mukshu parityago vairagya phalgu patyade.
But that's the vairagyam phalgu katyate. That's the incomplete form of renunciation. Yes? Anasaktasya vishayana.
Yataram upayunjata. Nirbandha Krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam achyate.
Okay. So, there's a qualifier at the front end, that is, not having attachment to sense gratification, but utilizing things in the service of the Supreme Lord. Nirbandha, Krishna Sambandhi. Krishna Sambandha, things that are in relation to Krishna. Things that are used because they're emanating from Krishna, they're used in relation to Krishna. This is the complete form of renunciation. But that's addressing renunciation. It's not addressing things becoming spiritual. The life of one that's dedicated, even involved in worldly things, becomes fully liberated. What is that verse? Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa ghira nikilapyasi vasta so jivan mukta sa uchate. Even things of this world, work, the mind, it's a material energy. Gira, the power of speech, it's a material faculty. We're using our tongue and air coming out of the lungs and position of the mouth cavity and your teeth and, you know, it's material stuff. But one who uses those things in service to Krishna, Harer Dasye, Jivan Mukta Uchate. Even in this world, one is considered liberated. So those things have then a liberating effect. They have a spiritualizing effect. Prabhupada often used the reference, there's a gold box and a gold-plated box, and the effect is the same. So there's the spiritual body, like the gold box, and there's the material body that's used in service to Krishna, that's like the gold-plated box. The effect is the same. Those things, just like on our altar, we have tadiya, paraphernalia, we call it, deity paraphernalia. The deity paraphernalia is as sacred as the deity. It's worshipable. You can place the paraphernalia on your head and receive spiritual benediction because it's paraphernalia of the Lord. Or on your heart, or just see and worship. Expansion of Lord Ananta, objects of worship. And so there it's sacred. And similarly, the body of a pure devotee is sacred. You know, some devotees keep in a very special place little locks of hair. When Prabhupada shaved his head, the devotees would beg for some pieces of Prabhupada's hair. Keep it in a special place and worship it. Or his shoes, or a sweater he wore. So the paraphernalia of a pure devotee is tadiya, the body of a pure devotee, just the touch of the body of a pure devotee, like the touch of the Ganges. So Rupa Goswami teaches us this principle, and then based upon this principle, then Prabhupada expands that the itihasa portion of the Vedas are known in the Shrutis themselves as the fifth Veda. We know the Vedas are four, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva Veda. And within those four Vedas, it describes the fifth Veda. That's the Puranas and Itihasas, composed from the same original Veda. When Vyasa divided the Vedas, he divided into four, but also into five. The four Vedas say, he divided into five. On the authority of the Shrutis, it says the Smritis are also Vedic. Modern scholars, Prabhupada calls them here in the purport, less intelligent men. Modern scholars say differently, but our Vedas themselves say the Ramayana and Mahabharata are in the Itihasa section. They're in the fifth Veda section. Why are they considered transcendental? For this reason, that they're in relation to the Supreme Lord. The problem, besides the misunderstanding of what the Vedas are, or what is Vedic, there's another problem, and that is persons without spiritual qualification, as in mundane scholars, they go to the Vedas as well as to the Puranas, as well as the Itihasas, and they can't figure it out, or they assess wrongly. Their assessment is, here comes Krishna and here comes Ram. They appear to be human. They appear to be doing ordinary things. They get married. They have children. They rule a kingdom. They combat their enemies. And they do all these worldly things. And so they're worldly. Or it's just mythology. It's a nice story to teach simple-minded people lessons of life. Just somebody made it up. Either one of them are quite offensive, and they're wrong. But because those persons have not submitted themselves to what the previous verses were describing, the necessity of understanding these things through a pure devotee of the Lord. Not being willing, it's stronger, being unwilling to submit to some spiritual authority, but having some intellectual capacity to know Sanskrit, they then go to the Sanskrit literatures and make some mundane rendition of the subject. Both the pastimes of Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna's devotees and the message of Krishna and the message of Krishna's devotees, and they distort it so it's beyond recognition anymore in the name of scholarship. Shame on them. Prabhupada is scolding. So now back to what the verse is saying. Prabhupada writes, unless these subjects are discussed by devotees, such literatures cannot be relished by the higher class of men. That is, somebody is giving a discourse on Bhagavad Gita, and they're a scholar that has no training in disciplic succession. The devotees are not at all interested. In fact, the devotees might be upset and disturbed. Why is this person that reads the Bhagavad Gita and understands from the Bhagavad Gita that one is to learn the Bhagavad Gita in disciplic succession, doesn't learn it from disciplic succession, and goes and speaks on Bhagavad Gita? It's a disturbance. Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Panchra, Triki, Vidhimbina, Ahaikuntiki, Harer, Bhaktir, Utpattaya, Iva Kalpate. In the words of our acharyas, this is but a disturbance. The blaring horns in the street is a disturbance, and the blaring of viewing of the asses that speak the message of Bhagavad Gita wrongly, it's also a disturbance. Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya said to Lord Chaitanya, before I met you, I was just like an ass who would loudly send out his message, pew, 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 in the name of giving knowledge. But you've saved me from my ass-like condition and have transformed me into a devotee of the Lord. And again, one of the qualities of a devotee of the Lord that the Lord decorates the devotee with is he becomes poetic instead of an ass. But that decoration is possible through the association of devotees, not otherwise. So now I want to read a little section from the purport that I don't even know how to summarize, because Prabhupada's way of writing is so beautiful. I'd just like to read it. So the conclusion is that the Lord is not impersonal in the ultimate issue. He is the Supreme Person, and He has His different activities. He's the leader of all living entities, and He descends at His will and by His personal energy to reclaim the fallen souls. Thus He plays exactly like the social, political, or religious leaders, because such roles ultimately culminate in the discussion of the topics of the Lord. All such preliminary topics are also transcendental, meaning before Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, He did so many things. And the message of Bhagavad Gita is transcendental, but the so many things that preceded His speaking Bhagavad Gita is also transcendental, because He's transcendental. The speaking is transcendental and the Leela is transcendental, both. That is the way of spiritualizing the civic activities of human society. The civic activities of human society. What does that mean? Civic activities? You know, the orderliness of our social intercourse, social interactions day by day. Like civic government. The day-to-day things that happen in life. The way of spiritualizing the day-to-day things that happen in ordinary life is to hear the topics of the Lord doing those things that appear to be like the things that we do. Ordinary things. It spiritualizes. Civic activities in human society. Then Prabhupada explains what he just said. Men have inclinations for studying history and many other mundane literatures, such as stories, fiction, dramas, magazines, newspapers, and so on. So let them be dovetailed with the transcendental service of the Lord, and all of them will turn to the topics relished by the devotees. Then a theme that Prabhupada... It takes a little insight to understand, but let's see if we can massage the topic a little bit. The propaganda that the Lord is impersonal, that He has no activity, and that He is a dumb stone without any name and form, has encouraged people to become godless, faithless demons. And the more they deviate from the transcendental activities of the Lord, the more they become accustomed to mundane activities that only clear their path to hell instead of return them home back to Godhead. Now, it's not so many times that Prabhupada mentions this, but when he does mention it, the sense is it brings him to the point of transcendental anger. When he hears that person speaking impersonalism, and it's abundant. I'll tell you a little Prabhupada story about this. Prabhupada would become angry. Now there's transcendentally angry. One kind of transcendental, one dimension of transcendental anger is something that even a mundane person can understand. I've used this to explain this to people. If someone said, your mother has no personality. Your mother has no face. She has no form. She has no qualities. She has no personality. How will you feel? Insulted? It's my mother you're talking about. What kind of talk is this? Because you have deep, or your friend or your wife or your child, someone that you care very deeply about. You're not going to just say, oh, that's an interesting philosophy. Let me check it out. Because you know, it's offensive. It's not just a philosophy, it's offensive. But Prabhupada is here disclosing another reason that would make him transcendentally angry. And that is, this impersonalism blocks the whole spirit of devotion to the Supreme, that which can uplift the quality and character of society. It's put down. And so where are they left? Krishna's imagination, nothing is real, only thing is real is impersonal. So, but there's no shelter there. And so then it just opens the door for unrestricted, I'm not under the control of any supreme authority, I can do what I like. So in the name of spirituality, one performs rasa-lila with men and women. I'll be Krishna, you'll be Radha, and some of the others, you can be gopis, and we'll have our rasa-lila. Okay? Open debauchery in the name of something spiritual, and it goes on. Or if not in such a disgusting, revolting fashion, in the just plain, everyday, ordinary imitation of Krishna fashion. Because the uplifting factor has been taken away by the so-called philosophy of everything is one. And that makes a transcendentalist very angry. So, little Prabhupada story. I don't know the whole thing because I wasn't there. But Burijan, in his book, My Glorious Master, describes an experience with Srila Prabhupada where he was in Japan or Hong Kong, one or the other. And Prabhupada was visiting, and Burijan had made an arrangement, I think it was in Hong Kong, where Prabhupada was invited to speak at a function, but there were two speakers. And the people that had set up the program, if I can recall this correctly, they really liked this one impersonal Swami, so they made a big seat for the impersonal Swami and a little small seat for Prabhupada. When Prabhupada came in, he went and sat on the big seat. Deliberately. So the people were trying to say, Swamiji, no, that is your seat. And Prabhupada made like he didn't understand, and he just stayed put. So when the other Swami spoke first, he was going on and on and on about it's all one. And Burijan was saying he was sitting next to Prabhupada and he was getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And finally he just grabbed his microphone and started speaking louder than the other Swami, explaining, you know, Krishna is the personality of Godhead, and said it in very strong language and rose and walked out of the assembly. Now, it's not advised that we do something like that. Prabhupada has the capacity to do something like that. But he was transcendentally angry for these reasons, insulting Krishna and cheating innocent people, taking away their opportunity for spiritual upliftment and bringing degradation instead. And I'll share one other thing. Prabhupada, this isn't in the conclusion is going to be, we need to vigorously preach in a cooperative manner. Prabhupada explained that during the time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, by his taking the order of Gaur Kishordas Babaji and his father upon his head, he took up preaching Krishna consciousness very vigorously. To do that, he accepted the order of sannyas, and he began traveling and preaching. And in the course of his missionary work, very valiantly and very vigorously and courageously, he presented Krishna consciousness and established 64 centers. And it was a beacon. It was so effulgent, spreading the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu where people had never heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Persons came to know of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the vigorous preaching, and he engaged his sannyasis in similar vigorous preaching. And after his departure, this is in private, Prabhupada explained, the mission was lost because persons became too much turf conscious. This is my temple, this is my mat, and this mat didn't cooperate with that mat, and everything broke down. Then Prabhupada said, in a short period of time, the Ramakrishna mission, which was obscure, filled that vacuum. And so many Ramakrishna mission places opened, propagating, don't worship Tulsi, grow cabbage. And better to feed people chicken than to, you know, give them prasad. It's impersonal teachings. Because, Prabhupada explained, the preaching had fallen. And so it was his wish to reestablish that vigorous preaching. Now, there's a problem when there's vigorous preaching and the persons who are the preachers do not represent the message properly. Their Krishna conscious qualities are not carefully cultivated. And their impurities come out through their preaching, and then there's squabbling amongst the individuals and so forth and so on. But so both must be there. The cultivation of proper quality and very enthusiastically giving this message to others. Propagating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and living the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, both are imperative. So one of the ways that the quality of Krishna consciousness is to be cultivated is, as identified right here, discussing the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, not as an academic affair, but as a spiritual exchange. Then spiritual qualities become the decorations of such devotees. And that's the message that we're receiving from Srila Prabhupada this morning. So while the topics, because the next topic they're going to speak about is again Maharaj Parikshit. They've heard about Hari Katamritam. They've heard about transcendence, about going back to Godhead. The very next verse is Maharaj Parikshit was a great king. So these are Paramahamsas. The Hamsa has the capacity of taking a mixture of milk and water and extracting the milk. And a Paramahamsa is one who can take seemingly ordinary activities and extract the essence, the Krishna Katha essence of it. The glorious feature of Maharaj Parikshit is his attachment to Krishna, his relationship with Krishna. And same with any of us. The spiritualizing of civic activities or affairs of society is found, the secret to it is found in this Hari Katha, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Ramayana, Mahabharata, and so on. And while our mind may be attracted to the ordinary features, we want to bring our mind to the transcendental feature. Okay, so I'll end there and see if there's any discussion. Questions?
In many places, Prabhupada writes this, that because of this impersonalism, the materialistic tendency in the people has increased very much.
Hmm.
And even in Puranas, this is mentioned, Lord Shiva mentions that I come as a Brahmana and preach impersonalism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my question is that even impersonalists actually also follow the rules and regulations of sense control, etc. How these two can fit in one?
Well, the strict sannyasis may do like that, but the effect upon people in general is that they're not capable of the same strictness, and so they remain fallen. But in their mind, it becomes justified because it's all illusion anyway, and so forth. And then this other, in the name, the deviation comes when, you know, the imitation of Krishna's activity that also enters, and that's a byproduct. Digression or transgression of what the real meaning of Krishna's activities are. That's like more rare or more blatant, but that's another byproduct. So for the upliftment of society in general, the message of Bhagavad Gita is required. And if one reduces the message of Bhagavad Gita to an impersonal conclusion, then the society is not going to become elevated, so it's inviting degradation. Krishna doesn't mean surrender unto him, he means surrender to the unborn, unmanifest within him. And how is one to make such a connection in practical life? So it invites degradation, where it ends up. Anything else?
Hare Krishna. In our daily activities, when we are preaching to somebody, if we come across impersonalists, how should we deal with them?
How should you deal with impersonalists when you encounter them?
Should we show anger, or should we completely ignore them, or how should we go exactly?
Well, it very much depends upon your capacity. In general, especially in the beginning stages of spiritual life, to keep a respectful distance. Some of our, as one becomes a little more accomplished, to engage in dialogue with those persons is fine. Part of the problem with doing so, even for someone who is quite expert, is these individuals may make offenses. Shivaram Maharaj wrote in a Vyasa Puja offering 2 or 3 years ago some experience that he had on stage in the UK when they were inaugurating something at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. And some public function. And he was on stage seated right next to an impersonal sannyasi. So there was another speaker and they had a side conversation, and point by point they were exchanging. And his appreciation was that just by being conversant in Prabhupada's really basic message, the impersonalist was silenced. So he was not... The homage to Vyasa Puja was not beating his own drum and blaring his own trumpet. It was appreciating that Prabhupada has prepared us to deal with the misconceptions that these individuals provide. But to do that, as Shivaram Maharaj did, requires some deep Krishna consciousness and deep realization, not just parroting words. So my answer to your question is depends upon your, you know, your capacity, whether to engage in dialogue. In many cases, the persons that we meet, they're not rigorous, just like Vedanta Chaitanya's comment and then question. It's not so often that we meet those that are actually rigorously following in any kind of strict way. There are some people like that, but by and large, mostly they just, it's all one message. Sometimes, you might want to employ this from time to time, just little one-liners can be sufficient. You meet someone that's an impersonalist, and rather than getting into this extended dialogue with them, little comments that Prabhupada would make include, if it's all one, then why are you wearing a cotton shirt instead of a cotton ball? If it's all one, then why don't you give me all your money since it's all one? You don't do like that because you don't actually have conviction. This is not a philosophy that you live your life by. It's just an armchair philosophy. Those that when Vivekananda came to Prabhupada, didn't use his name, but when he came to America in, I think it was 1896, to attend the World Congress of Religion or something like that, he came with the message saying, all of you have come to worship God and honor God, but I've come with the message that you are all God. And the religious leaders in the West had never heard that kind of rhetoric before. But then Prabhupada says, the deliverer of the message that you are all God, he had to leave the conference because he had a toothache. God got a toothache. And the pain was unbearable, so he had to leave the conference. What kind of God is that? What kind of teaching is that? So, rather than a long extended dialogue, you can become familiar with different things, because it's Leelamrita is filled with it. Things that were in other exchanges that Prabhupada disciples had with Prabhupada, how he personally addressed with little one-liners, dismissing the notion of impersonalism, rather than a long extended discussion. Unless you find it appropriate. I've been in circumstances when I've chosen to have a dialogue and chosen not to. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.